The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, everybody, it's Chuck Arfine. Welcome to the White Sox Talk Podcast, coming to you as always by our great friends at Wintrust. Okay, for a White Sox team with visions of winning a World Series, start of the season has been a disappointment. Let's be honest, the results have been mixed overall. Now, there have been great things happening with Dylan Cease, Michael Kopech, T.A., Luis Robert, Andrew Vaughn, Matt Foster, Kendall Graveman, even Johnny Cueto, who had that sparkling debut in Kansas City. But there are some things happening that have raised my alert level. Some trends happening that if they don't improve, then it's close to panic time. We're not there yet. Let's just say we're in the neighborhood at this point. So what are these concerning trends? And who are they? What's going on? How concerned are we? How concerned should you be? Ryan McGuffey joins me with our White Sox early season panic levels. We got the meter out. We'll share with you our panic meter concerns next.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With White Sox checking, you'll score a Sox debit card. Plus, you'll get a special offer when you open online today at Wintrust.com/SoxTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
Okay, Ryan McGuffey, it is the month of May. I do not panic. I should say, I normally don't panic in the month of May. I wait till June. I wait till Memorial Day. But then I look at the calendar and I'm like, wait, it's almost Memorial Day. We need to discuss some things that are percolating, is that the right word, with the White Sox, or have percolated with the White Sox so far this season?
There's a lot of words you can use, Chuck, a lot, and it's a lot of it's not good. So whatever the words are for terrible, I'm just talking about certain categories, right? One in particular, I think you know where I'm going.
Yeah, we're talking about Dylan Cease. He's been terrible.
Talk about not taking a step forward.
I know. He's just taken several steps forward.
Yeah. This is not the Dylan Cease Appreciation Podcast.
No. I mean, I wish this was the White Sox Offense Appreciation Podcast, but it is the dissatisfaction with this offense. Most of what I think we're panicked about or getting close to that is revolving around the offense. So we're going to put our panic levels on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. Why don't we just start with just the offense in general?
Okay.
My biggest problem is the ripple effect that this could have on the rest of the team if this continues to happen, because they've won, as we tape this, 18 times. 17 of their 18 wins have been decided by 4 runs or less. The only blowout they've had was the third game of the season. They blew out the Tigers 10-1. That's where you, as a fan, the pitchers, can take a break. Tony La Russa can take a break. No, there's been no break. And I'm concerned that the taxing mentality of what this is going to do on the team if this continues where every game is close. What do you think?
I 1,000% agree with you. And it's not sustainable. It's not. Because at some point, I mean, the pitching's been so good. In particular, the starting pitching has been so good that everyone, like, we know that Dylan Cease, the expectation right now, Chuck, with the way the offense is performing, is that when Dylan Cease gets the ball, well, like that's a set it and forget it. And it's just not, that's just not realistic. It's not fair to Dylan Cease either. And forget just Dylan Cease, the starting rotation across the board. When Lucas Giolito pitched, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's Lucas Giolito day. You only need two runs or three runs. And again, not sustainable. And you're beating up a bullpen that needs to work some things out. Like
there's no margin for error, basically.
Zero margin for error. As we tape this, the White Sox are a top 10 starting pitching staff in baseball. They're tied. Actually, they're tied with the Padres and the Twins for ERA. I mean, they are amongst the elite. And that's without, and that's, you know, without, they're fifth in the American, or tied for fourth in the American League as we tape this. So, and it's regardless, it's kind of like regardless of who's pitching, there's just been success up and down the ladder. And yeah, there's been certain guys in the bullpen that have had some rough spots. But when you're pitching as well as you are as a whole, you can afford to like live through those things. But there's so much. Like you said, there's no margin for error. So if Liam Hendricks comes in and walks two guys, it's like the sweat mentality happens. And then the finger pointing goes to Liam Hendricks. No one's talking about, well, they scored three runs and they all came in the fourth inning. And that's what I'm worried about. I'm with you. I think there's legit. I know.
Joe McEwen got criticized for sending Josh Harrison the other day. But, you know, so maybe that was an aggressive send. But when you're only scoring, you know, one run or no runs, you got to do whatever you can to get that run in.
Yeah. And what's that? So that ties the game. And then what so there's, is there a guarantee the White Sox win it? No. I mean, that's where I don't blame Joe McEwen. You know, like the Dozier send maybe in game one of that doubleheader was a little bit more like scratch.
Yeah, I
wasn't scratching my head at the Harrison send. I really wasn't, because I understand there's like a little bit of desperation in that.
Yeah. Ozzie said, as a former third base coach himself, he won a World Series as a third base coach, what you got to do in that situation is know how many outs there are. There were two. Know who's on deck. And that was Luis Robert, who was the hottest hitter. Maybe you don't make that send in that situation, but you know, it's a second guessing thing. You don't know what Andrew Benintendi was going to do. Was he really going to throw it online? And he did. And one more thing on, you know, my concern about all these close games, Scott Pitsenik was on the post game show. He actually saw the flip side of this, which is he likes a team that plays a lot of close games because you're battle tested for when it matters. But we're only in May. I think this team could be so battle tested. They're exhausted by August and September. So that's,
I've thought about that. Like I've thought about, well, it's not a bad thing. Well, it's a bad thing when it's every night.
Yeah.
You know, like he's talking from experience of a 2005 team that won a ton of one-run games, but they also won a ton of blowout games, and they got hot and they sustained it for such a long time. I mean, they started 16-4, for God's sake. So I hear where he's coming from on that. I just don't think it's a benefit to play sweated out game every night. Not in such a grind of a sport.
We're going to give our panic level assessment to the offense in a second, but I want to share with you what I think is the problem with the offense, or I should say who is the problem with the offense. And they're kind of coming out of it. So I'm hoping this changes soon, but I'm going to look at one statistic that says a lot to me about the White Sox in 2022. It is OPS plus, that tabulates on-base percentage plus slugging percentage. So it's getting on base, it's getting doubles, homers, extra bases, normalizes the number across the entire league. It accounts for external factors like ballparks too. So a score of 100 is league average. Anything above 100 is above league average. Anything below 100 is below league average. You want to be well above, or at least somewhat above 100. Tim Anderson's 149. He's doing great. Andrew Vaughn's 133. Luis Robert's 129. You want to see these guys in those positions. Why are the White Sox struggling out of the gate? All right, Jose Abreu. Last year, he was 125. This year, and he's kind of inching up a little bit because of his series in Kansas City, he's 85. Yasmani Grandal, 157 last year. He's 61. AJ Pollock, 136 last year. 64. Larry Garcia, 96. He should be right around league average. Guffey's 41. And then Josh Harrison, who will combine with the Nats and A's to be 107, he's at 54. Some of those guys, like, you know, Leary and Pollock and Garcia, they're not supposed to carry the offense. But Abreu and Grandal, they're batting third, fourth, and fifth in this lineup. And if you have an OPS plus in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, you're going to lose a lot of games, or at least have too many close games.
Yeah. You know, I like lately, and when I say lately, at this point with sample sizes with the White Sox offense, it's like two games. Like, I like what I've seen lately, and it's like, oh, he's 3 for 5. You know, like, maybe this is it. I do like what I you're starting to see. I mean, like, the scale isn't going like this. It's just very, very minute.
Gradual.
Very gradual. Lately, the last couple of games, I like what I've seen from Grandal and Abreu. Maybe that's a good sign. But yeah, here's the problem I have, Chuck. It's those two guys in particular are just plug and play guys for Tony, for the coaching staff. They are just they are hell bent on making those guys hit 4 and 5 hitters, and that's where I have a problem. I show me some flexibility, show me some creativity. And,
yeah, like have Andrew Vaughn bat ninth.
No. Like, that's not the creativity.
Oh, that's not what you speak of? Oh,
and,
okay.
And then the explanation is just
that was creative.
I'm just like, I can't scratch my head enough on the explanation about the 9-hitter thing. Turning it, I understand that it's the second leadoff hitter, but I want Andrew Vaughn getting more at bats in that spot than Reese McGuire or Leary Garcia. So I just, when I say like some flexibility or creativity, maybe it means moving Jose Abreu to 6 one night and protecting him with guys who are hotter. I mean, TA is the one constant in the lineup at the top, right? And then from there, and you know Luis Robert should be hitting third every night. From there, like, that's where I get creative. And I kind of mix and match based off of what the trends are as of right now. Like, Gavin Sheets as of late been showing some pop and some flashes that maybe he's coming out of it. Maybe I'm popping Gavin Sheets in that 4-5 spot to protect Jose Abreu a little bit. And that's the problem I see. Like, there's so much. And I think that you guys have talked about this on the pre and post game show about, you can just see sometime when a guy's pressing. I mean, obviously Ozzy's had a million experiences with it, but just Jose Abreu, when he's coming up in those situations, the spotlight's on him and he's got this expectation, and rightfully so. He's one of the best players in White Sox history that he's got to perform. When you're wearing that and you're 1 for 22, or 2 for 35. I think that's kind of what I'm talking about, Chuck, when I talk about this on a grander whole.
And maybe you start Tim Anderson in game 2 of a doubleheader when he's 6 for 9 in his career against Brady Singer.
that seemed to stir the pot a little bit.
That did. let's not get into that. watch the post game shows and you'll get our opinions on that. Anyway, so here we go. Let's get our panic level for the offense in general right now. What is your panic level right now, 1 through 10?
8.
8?
It's high. Dude, Chuck, right now, as the Royals, Tigers, and A's are the only three teams with a worse OPS than the Chicago White Sox. Wow. The Royals, Tigers, and A's. Those teams are dog shit, and that's just a fact. And the White Sox should not be in any category with those three teams. They shouldn't. Not in 2022. If this is not 2017 or 18. This is a team with an offense that's capable of doing a lot more. And I'm not saying they're the New York Yankees, but they should certainly be in the conversation with those type of teams. When you look at the lineup top to bottom, they have the talent. I'm sick of hearing about injuries. All we talk about in the last 2 years, here's why my panic level is an 8. I go back to the All-Star break last year. This looks this just looks like a pattern of almost 100 games of playing mediocre baseball, 500 baseball, a lot of up and down. And it's like, well, who's coming back? Oh, Eloy's coming back. Or, you know, Mankata's back now. And it's just been a repetitive thing for 2 seasons. It's like, there's not as much talk about Lance Lynn lately, right? Because, well, they're starting rotations. But like, it's more about, well, what's going to happen when Lance Lynn comes back? Instead, everyone's like, Eloy might be coming back sooner than later. We got to stop that. Because there's no, like, Eloy, when he was here, was just, like, in the early going, was just kind of falling into the same problems. There are guys in the lineup that I certainly don't have a panic meter of 8 when I look at them individually. But as a whole, I don't like the pattern, so I'm saying 8.
In April, I was at a 2 because I don't panic in April. I saw what these guys are capable of. And yeah, it was freezing out. The weather sucked.
Yep.
And I gave them a lot of rope. The weather's good enough to be hitting right now. Currently, I'm at a 6. And if they did not have a track record in one category, I'd put it at an 8 probably. And that has to do with walks. I mean, they're in last place in the major leagues by a country mile in walks. But last year, just last year, they ranked 4th in the majors in walks. It's not like all of a sudden this team lost all of its plate discipline, although it looks like it. So at least enough players on this team, and Moncada's back and he drives walks, enough players on this team have a foundation to go on to draw some walks, to get on base more, and turn this around. So that is why I'm at a 6 and not an 8. But I understand, well, Guffaw, you're at an 8. I understand if you're a White Sox fan and you're at an 11, because it's been ugly.
I mean, Chuck, like Brady Singer's been terrible, right, in 2022.
Yeah, he just got called up from AAA and made that start against the Sox.
Yeah, right. I'm sick of, like, one pitch at bats, two pitch at bats, zero patience at the plate. This is a guy who went out there and flat out dominated. Our friend Jay Cutta on Twitter, who's a great White Sox follower, their last 16 innings against Brady Singer. Like, I'm going to just use Brady Singer as an example here, because you could probably find a lot of pitchers. 17 strikeouts, no walks, no runs.
He had no good stuff, but come on. Yeah, you got to, like, scratch some runs together against Brady Singer.
Too many pitchers are pitching deep into the game on the White Sox because they're not taking it. Like, there's just too many, you know, 9, 8, 10, 11 pitch innings.
Yep. All right, so let's get to Jose Abreu. In April, we kept saying, he'll be better in May. He'll be better in May. He's always better in May. He's worse. Although, he did have that two-run double against the Royals, and he seems to be improving. And if that's the case, then I'm not overly concerned. If this is just a slump, I got Jose Abreu at a 4 on my panic meter. But if it's something more than that, 7.5. 7.5. It was 7 a couple of days ago. But now I'm like, they need Jose Abreu back. It doesn't have to be 100% Jose Abreu of last year, but give me 90% of that. Right now, we're getting half of them at best.
I'm going to give a little bit of respect to Jose Abreu because I think he's earned it. I do think that at some point, as we all know, as aging players get up there, there's, like, sometimes it's a, you know, I'd hate to use the bug windshield analogy, but the White Sox have used it, and they're Ryan Burr used it. The cliff, you know, whatever it's like. Sometimes the fall is quicker than others, and I don't want to go there with Jose Abreu. Build a statue of the guy. He's an all-timer. But, I mean, how many years are we going to expect Jose Abreu to carry this team? At this point, when we started this, when the rebuild started, there were some guys that you were hoping were going to kind of take that torch and show signs of being that guy, so Jose Abreu could figure, kind of fall back into line, and you wouldn't have to go, well, Jose, here's that light again. It's your turn again. You've been doing it since 2014. So I'm going to give him, my panic level on him is a 5, because I think that at the end of the year, we're going to look at his card and it's going to say 25 homers and he's going to have a lot of RBI. It's been bad, but I fault some of the other guys. I fault not seeing progression. So somebody else could, for the first time ever, can pick up Jose Abreu rather than everyone look at going, oh, Jose's our guy. He's our leader. He'll figure it out. I just don't think that's fair.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I, TA and Luis Robert, there's enough guys who are taking the mantle, so to speak, taking it from him, taking the baton. You just look at what he's been doing, and we looked at a heat map of where his outs have been this year. I mean, it's like red on the left side of the infield. 6-3, 5-3, 5-3, 6-3. So many ground ball outs. So many ground balls, period. And he's been throwing a whole lot more sliders. He's chasing a lot more. And he just has not been that, like, guy. That guy that just carries the team for a while when they're not hitting. I'm hoping this Royals series is the turning point for him, or it begins the turning point, goes to New York, and we're off and running. And when September rolls around, we can go, remember back in May when we thought this was the end for Jose Abreu? I'm really hoping that is the case. All right, Yasmani Grandal. So I believe he has 4 extra base hits this year. He He's slugging 248. He had a homer in Kansas City, but listen, I mean, I know he had that second knee surgery in the offseason. He didn't have a lot of time, he said, to get the reps he needed offensively during spring training, but we're in the middle and end of May. He's a free agent after next season, by the way. I thought we had like three more years of Yasmani Grandal.
It's been a weird couple of years with Yasmani Grandal, let's be honest. You know?
My panic level for him is at a 4. Like, this could easily go down to 2 if he just gets hot and I have to think about this. But, you know, there's still a lot of baseball left. I mean, that's the thing. There's over 125 games left to play. But right now we have to think, is this what we're getting from Yasmani Grandal, or is this just a little blip? What do you think?
Well, on this date a year ago, his slugging percentage was .316, and his batting average was .132.
He's improving.
My point is, I'm going to put my panic level. I like the 4. I'll put it right in the middle too, because at some point I do expect him to take off, and you're paying him for it. You know, like, he's the highest paid player in franchise history, and you know, I'm kind of sick of seeing Yasmani Grandal and Reese McGuire in the same lineup for virtually 5 out of 7 days a week. Don't like that, because Reese McGuire was brought here to be the backup catcher and do exactly what he's done as a backup catcher. Maybe they're saved. Maybe it's part of saving Yaz's knees for down the stretch, but then he needs to get going. So because I've seen the pattern, again, this goes back to like Abreu a little bit. I've seen the slow start pattern in a White Sox uniform from Yaz, where he just was video game like in the second half. So I don't, again, like as a whole, like I look at Yaz kind of as an individual and go, I've seen this before and I expect a launch. So at this point, knowing where he was a year ago, and I just gave you those numbers, he was maybe a tick better because he had more walks, but he was pretty much the same guy.
Let's move on to Josh Harrison, who I thought was a good fit for this team. And I'm not going to give up 100% on him yet, but he's approaching DEFCON 10. Is there a DEFCON 10? No, there's
for this,
not.
For this podcast, there is.
Okay. I don't have him at 10. Where do I have him? I have him at 9. I mean, he's batting .164. He's batting under 100 with men on base. Just nothing's going right for him. Even, I mean, a couple times you see him hit the ball hard and it goes right at somebody. I'm not making excuses for him, but just this has not worked out as of yet. So I remember watching him when he was with the Tigers and with the A's. I think he was with the Tigers, right? I think he was with the Tigers.
Yeah.
And he'd come to town and he was just having so much fun, brought so much energy. And I was like, it stood out. And I'm like, the Sox need this guy. But when you're only hitting 150 and you have that kind of energy, it's kind of comes across as like, well, you can't really be that guy if you're not contributing. What do you think about Josh?
I totally agree with you. You can't be the guy who hits a double every 10 days and be the spark plug at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you think about players in the last few years that have been spark plugs, you know, like Billy Hamilton comes to mind. Billy Hamilton's stealing 2 bases. Billy Hamilton's making a ridiculous
catch. He's winning you games.
Billy Hamilton is making a ridiculous catch to save a game. Pouring down rain in Minnesota, winning you games with the bat, you know, a phenomenon. I think of, you know, Brian Goodwin with the bat flip against the Cubs. And even like when you see like some other guys starting to come out of it, you know, Abreu has a couple of hits and look at the smile on his face like that. I felt like that was kind of like, oh my God, like the monkey's coming off, or Gavin Sheets I was kind of one of those people thinking maybe Gavin Sheets belongs in Charlotte to get right. And then you stay with him and he has a 3-homer week and like the smile came up. There's, you can't be the energy guy if you're not doing it on the field. And I'm with you. I'm not saying he's not a good fit for the team. He's good in the clubhouse and stuff, but there's an expect like he's kind of a DFA candidate at some point. Probably. I mean, they'll probably hold on to him longer. Certainly when I say longer, like they'll have a reassessment as it gets into July probably, but it's not what it's – I don't think anybody in the White Sox organization expected this Josh Harrison as we sit here in mid-May. I don't think anyone.
Yeah. In his favor, there are so many baseball games. And we could say he's got a couple months to figure it out. That gives him 60 games to figure this out. So if he doesn't, Danny Mendick is a possibility. You look down in Charlotte, Yolbert Sanchez is an interesting guy. Now, he started in Double A, is in Triple A now. His numbers, when you slash them together, it's 315, 433 on base percentage, but he's slugging 342. He's got only three doubles and no home runs. I don't watch him on a daily basis to know if he's a good defender. I don't think he's your answer for this team that's trying to win a World Series or certainly a division. That's just my guess. So we might have to look around the trade deadline if Josh Harrison doesn't turn it around. Should I give
the about second base again, huh?
Yeah, I know, second base. And here's a guy. If you need a guy, you need a second baseman at the deadline. The Reds are 10 and 27. They're not good.
That's horrible.
Every team is going to be calling these guys.
Higher OPS than the White Sox, though.
Well, they have Brandon Drury. Brandon Drury is going off. At last check, he had 8 doubles, 7 homers, 22 RBIs. He would have more homers and RBIs than anybody on the White Sox. He's playing for $700,000. He's a free agent after this season. He's played second base, third base. Just letting you know that's a possibility.
I can't believe we're even coming up with options right now, but yep.
Okay. Just letting you know, there's second base options. What was your number for Josh Harrison, by the way?
9.
9. We're at the same place.
I don't want to say
AJ Pollock.
A month from now, it'd be 10 on Harrison for sure.
Okay.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
AJ Pollock's betting 218. He's above 200 now. Here's what I would say about Pollock. You want a hot and cold streaky hitter, this is the guy. So last year, his OPS by month, this just tells you it's not always like this with him, but this might explain why he's gotten off to a slow start. 701 for April. That's not a good OPS. Then it's 1,082, 648, 1,121, 855. And then in September, 1,156. So when he's good and he's clicking, he's clicking. But when he struggles and it coincides with the whole team struggling, that's not good. And that's kind of what we've been seeing with Pollock in this offense.
It's weird because I keep giving like my panic level for like the individuals much lower than my team concern. But like AJ Pollock's a guy that I'm definitely going to rate lower because I do know, like you mentioned, the ebbs and flows of him. He's been an above 800 OPS guy, or here, let's use OPS plus, over 100. So he's been above average, above league average for the last 4 years, not counting 2022. 108, 107, 132, 135. Like trending up to be a pretty damn good player. And you can go back further and see that he's very consistent with that too. You know, the one thing I look about with AJ Pollock, for me, it's about health. He needs just to stay on the field. If AJ Pollock stays on the field, I think the numbers are going to come. We know about the injury history with him, but looking to play 100 games back-to-back for the first time since 17-18, like that to me, that's success right now with AJ Pollock. As long as he's in the lineup, if we're going to AJ Pollock every night, talking about that spot, bringing that spotlight mentality back again and putting it on him, well, the White Sox are in trouble because that's not what he was brought in here for. He's brought in here to be a above average player in both the outfield and at the plate. Right now, he's gone off to a slow start. I do wonder, Chuck, maybe I'll ask him this at some point, but just, you know, he's only played in Arizona and LA. You know, he's never played in this type of weather before. And I am not going to make an excuse about the
he's
weather.
He's from Connecticut.
Well, you know the last time he lived in Connecticut?
Well, he grew up playing in this weather.
Yeah. Do you know the last time he lived in Connecticut? It was like 17 years ago.
It's 1940s.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, it is what it is. But he's a guy I don't, I'm going to throw him right in the mix to five. I'm just average on him. Cause I just, as long as he stays on the field, to me, that's what I want with AJ Pollock. Keep playing.
I put my panic level at four with him. I'm not concerned. And you were talking about riding a guy when he's hot and you're going to know it. It hasn't happened yet. It started happening out of the gate in Detroit. You'll know when he's hot. That's when you bat him really high up in the lineup.
See, and that, by the way, that's a guy that Tony has moved all around the lineup.
Yeah, he has.
Like, I'm okay. Like, you hit him down in the lineup and let him figure it out. Why is it only a couple guys like that? And the guys that you scratch your head the most about, you're like, wait, why is he hitting seventh? Do it with everyone.
All right, couple more. Defense.
Oh.
I can say I do believe the White Sox are no longer in last place in errors. This is progress.
Wow, let's have a party.
Last year they were eighth. They had the eighth most errors, and it's not all about errors. It's about shifting. It's about range. There's all sorts of things that go into the mix with defense. But you know, and I know, this is not a great defensive team. Now, if you have a really good offense and a really good pitching staff, that can make up for a lot of your defensive mistakes, errors. Because you can make two errors in a game, but if your team scores five runs, you might win that game. And if your pitching staff is only holding the defense, they're holding the opposition to a couple of runs, you're doing fine. But when you are not hitting, and when your bullpen might struggle, or even your occasional bad start by a Dylan Cease or Lucas Giolito, you need a good defense or it's going to cost you games. And right now where this team is, they cannot afford to have a bad defense.
I'm going to name some teams again where you don't want to be. When you are in the category of Oakland A's, Pittsburgh Pirates, Washington Nationals, Arizona Diamondbacks, what's that tell you?
That tells us that the White Sox have a bad defense, or at least so far.
And I've mentioned some of those teams multiple times on this podcast. So,
and yet the White Sox are still around 500.
Yeah, like that's the positive of this. I mean, yeah. The positive is that they play in the American League Central.
Yeah.
Which I thought was going to be have a much better start to the season, and it's not, which has benefited the White Sox. So, but you can't keep, you know, we got to be a month from now and be talking about being more with the teams like Tampa Bay and Atlanta, you know, San Francisco, like you want the Yankees, you want to be in those talks, Toronto, when we're talking about categories. I don't think that they're going to be in those talks when we talk about defense. They're just not a good defensive team. And quite frankly, they really haven't been the last couple of years. I mean, right? Like pitching and defense may get you like average or below average defense might get you to the postseason. It ain't going to win you it's not going to win you postseason. Yeah. And they finished 26th last year in fielding percentage. So, you know, at second base, Chuck, I said this on the podcast and you know it. I mean, we've talked, we're friends. So I wanted the best defensive option I didn't care if the guy hit 185 and I'd feel the same right now. If he's playing just like Gold Glove caliber defense and you put him at the end of the lineup, fine. But that's not what we're seeing right now. It's just not. As you're seeing the 185.
So what's your panic meter?
With the defense? It's definitely, it's nine. Nine and a half. Tell me why here's the problem. There's been such a snowball effect in games this year, which I haven't seen before, where like one guy makes an error and it leads to like two more in the end. I always think of Dallas. I mean, Dallas Keuchel starting, which is a guy you would think the defense would be on your toes. That's like where, not because it's Dallas Keuchel, but for whatever reason, the defense behind him has been awful. And when he's on the mound, like it's like I'm already standing up in the first inning. And I don't like that. So I'm a 9.5.
Okay. I'm at 8. Not that I'm, you know, that far from you. But yeah, it's a concern. It is a concern. And see, here's the thing. I think they can fix the offense. I'm not sure how much they can fix the defense. I think the defense is what it is.
I totally agree.
I mean, it can be a little bit better. I think the offense can be a lot better. So I have more concerns about the defense. All right, last category. Winning the division. I think everybody, unless you were in the clubhouse with the Twins, the Guardians, Tigers, and Royals. I don't know if anyone inside the Royals clubhouse thought they'd win the division this year. But anyway, you get my point. Everyone expected this team to win the division. It might be closer than last year. Well, right now, I'm looking at Baseball Reference and their percentages. If you want to go off of analytics, It's not reality, but it's analytics. The percentages, the chances, the odds that the White Sox win the American League Central right now, they have a 33% chance of winning it. The Twins are at 29%. The Guardians are 35.6%. They're ahead of the White Sox. What do you think about that?
What do I think about the Guardians, or what do I think about my panic meter?
Okay, give me your panic meter.
This is going to might surprise some people. I'm going to say 3, because of all the things that we can sit here and panic about and dissect, and they've been the bad, which has been bad at times, you know. The AL Central is right in that category. So I'm not a believer in the Twins, at least as like a 90 plus win team. Like they've been a really good start, like a very surprising starting rotation. Their offense has some big time names with Buxton and Correa. Their bullpen to me is a big question mark down the stretch. Like I think I trust the names in the White Sox bullpen as the season goes on more than I do the Minnesota Twins. And I just think it's going to be very clunky and clumpy for a while. The Indians are always going to be there. Like their offense has been what I thought the White Sox offense would be. And Jose Ramirez is going to be a perennial MVP candidate, as he should be. But as like we said, all these problems, they're right at or around 500, and they're sniffing at the division lead. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're going to play us like a softer schedule coming up. They're going to like the Twins, you know, are a few games above 500, and they've beat up a lot on the Orioles, on the Tigers, on the A's, the teams you don't want to. Those are the teams you don't want to be in a category with, but you can't wait to play. And the Twins have done that, so at some point that's going to flip flop. That's kind of where I'm at, Chuck. Like I still expect the White Sox to win this division by 5 games. I really do. I think that's a very realistic expectation, even with what we've seen from the White Sox so far.
All right, so we did this exercise on the pregame show a few days ago, looking at the panic meter. And Ozzie Guillen, his panic meter for the White Sox to not win the division was 1. He's like, they're going to win the division. I have it higher. I have it at 6, mainly because I'm seeing what they're doing against the Twins and the Guardians so far. It's a small sample size. But they're 0-3 against the Twins. They're 1-4 against the Guardians. They have not matched up at all against these two teams, and they play each other a lot going forward. It's going to depend, to me, on how they play against them the rest of the way. If they continue to struggle against the Twins and the Guardians, that's going to be the difference between maybe them winning the division and them losing it. Because not only are the White Sox losing those games, those teams that you're fighting with in the division are winning them, and that's going to keep them in it until the very end.
Look, the White Sox were 12 games over 500 last year against the AL Central. And this is a nauseam conversation, because if you don't beat your division, you won't win your division. Yeah. So I like your 6 game, or your panic at 6. Totally get it. Especially the way they've played thus far, just kind of overall. As we taped this, I think they're like 5 games under or so against the American League Central. That has to change. They have to beat up on the Royals and Tigers when they play them. They have to. They have to take advantage. They have to kick them while they're down. They've been really down. And they got to at least play, you know, middle, like 500 against those two other teams. And if they do that, then that should lead to another, you know, 10, 12, 15 games over 500 in the American League Central. So I understand where you're coming from. A couple of the losses thus far in that small sample size you talk about have been one of those crazy, weird, like walk-off type losses.
Fluky, or
you know, when you go back and look at the box score, it doesn't tell you what really happened, and you're going to have those games throughout the season. I mean, we saw like the Guardians 8-2 one just jumps off the page like that like the Josh Naylor game, like they had a 99.8% chance, I think, to win that game. So like that one, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. When it's 8-2 in the ninth and just all hell, like the dam breaks. So I'd like to see when it's all said and done. I think the White Sox they have better talent. They're better pitchers. They don't have better defense. They have a better bullpen. And they have a better lineup than every one of those teams. And if they don't prove that, they won't go to the playoffs. And there should be a lot of people that there'll probably be people losing their jobs if that's the case, because this team deserves to be in the postseason, or should be in the postseason.
Yeah. All right. So it's May. We'll circle back in a couple months and see where things are at with this team. Let's hope they are on the rise. Obviously, they still have this three more games with the Yankees. That's not going to be easy. But they got to find their way. And to me, offense. It's all about the offense. If offense doesn't pick up, panic level continues to go up.
That's it. It's all about the offense. It's literally the reason. I mean, the defense has failed them, but like they should be winning games. They should not be scoring three runs a game. You know, like there's just really no excuse unless you're a bad baseball team that you're scoring three runs a game. And when with the guys they're rolling out there, there's not a person in the organization that would tell you that they should be scoring three runs a game. There's stretches where you can be bad and have guys are all kind of collectively not hitting. We're beyond that stretch. I mean, we're coming up on Memorial Day, like the first barometer mark of the season. And we need to, like, things need to change. Bats need to wake up.
I'll say this to end it. I'm not panicking, but I am concerned.
It's too early to panic, but there are things that have you, you know, make you go,
Okay. That's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/socks. Thank you, Ryan McGuffey, as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, our Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast is over.
Hey, grab your Scav Squad. And you can win a share of $5,000 May 20th through the 22nd in the Chicago Scav Hunt. Win the hunt! But you can also win for your hunting costumes and your team name and more. Visit playeatlas.com to learn more and sign up. Let's go hunting, Chicago! See full rules and regulations before playing.